Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Mix and match 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries for $2.99 each when you buy three. Take advantage of this exclusive digital deal. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast Untrimmed Twin Pack, $3.97 per pound, limit one package. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, audio cut of the day coming up here. By the way, I did figure out the host gets easily confused. The golf show is actually at the end of the month. So it is at the St. Charles Convention Center, January 31st through February 2nd. We'll give away tickets each and every day this week. I'll, from now on, know where the golf show is. For whatever reason, I had in my mind that it was this weekend because I want to go to the damn thing, and I'm out of town this weekend. My friend John Ziegler back with us. He is the host of the Death of Journalism podcast. I listened to his podcast today, the new one, which deals with a lot of the fallout from the California fires. Zig, welcome back. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Mark.
Where do you, before we get into some of this, remind me of the geography from where you are, and you've been safe in areas that don't have fires, correct?
Well, I mean, we've had fires here. Our house is fine right now. I live in Ventura County, just north of Los Angeles. Okay. We had catastrophic fires about a month ago that really went right up to into our neighborhood, but thankfully we were okay. I've had in-laws in other parts of Los Angeles have been evacuated, but thankfully they are so far okay. But obviously, this has been a catastrophic event of unprecedented proportions here in the Los Angeles area.
So, you know, I was talking about golf here just a minute ago. You are a very good golfer, and this area, Pacific Palisades, that's not too far from Riviera Country Club, right?
It's right on Riviera Country Club. As a matter of fact, I'm astonished that we haven't heard that the PGA Tour event scheduled for Riviera next month has yet to be canceled or postponed. I just don't know how in the world they could possibly have it. There's been no word on whether that's going to happen. I've been to that area many, many times, having played and attended events at Riviera Country Club. And Pacific Palisades is a typical area, as you know the area pretty well. You know Los Angeles. There's so many areas in Los Angeles where you go and you go, wow, this is beautiful, but what the heck are people doing living here? And that it's like a ticking time bomb situation. And to me, the strongest analogy to be made to what has happened here is really Hurricane Katrina, where that was a ticking time bomb, where New Orleans is built under sea level, and eventually you were going to have a perfect storm that was going to cause what happened after Katrina occurred. And I think we've had a similar situation here in Los Angeles, and the perfect storm was that we had no rain at all in December, and then we have almost historic Santa Ana winds in January, which normally would not cause a problem because the ground would be wet because this is the rainy season, but we haven't had any rain yet in this rainy season, and that combined with an awful lot of institutional incompetence in this state led to the perfect storm of catastrophe.
And we'll get to that here in a second, but let me just ask this. So last Tuesday, a week ago today, I subscribed to the LA Times. I saw the story about the wind conditions, and instantly I told Fred, I said, this is going to be potentially really, really bad out there. Now, I never, ever envisioned anything like we've seen in the Palisades and Altadena and beyond that. But how much buildup in the media before Tuesday was there for this potential, you know, disaster, John?
obviously hindsight is 20/20, but I have no recollection of there being any sort of massive alarm bells going off. And obviously, and it's not just retrospect, because you just cited it right there. This did not take, you know, the proverbial rocket scientist to figure this out. You know, if you have no rain through December and then you have massive Santa Ana winds from the desert in January, there's going to be a problem. And there was no sense of urgency in the media, and there was no preparedness. The mayor of Los Angeles was abroad, and it's obvious that nothing extraordinary was done to prepare. I love now that both in Los Angeles and in the State House in California, they're bragging about how prepared they are for this week's winds. And I'm like, well, okay, that's great. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Right.
You know, that's a bit too late. And it proves, by the way, that preparation does matter here and can make a massive difference. And so I think you make a really good point that there was nowhere near the sense of urgency, either in the media or among the authorities, that should have been there because of obvious, very unique circumstances.
On your podcast, The Death of Journalism, you highlighted this, and I played this audio last week, and I think a lot of people heard it. It went a little viral when, you know, there's a discussion about water not being in fire hydrants.
The real issue to me is twofold. We've had decades to go remove the brush in these hills. It spreads so quickly.
So that's Rick Caruso, and he tells his story.
To Gigi Graciette, she is live in Pacific Palisades. I know your signal's not the best, but Gigi, what can you tell us?
Well, firefighters have told me they have no water on this block, and you may be able to make out the ember storm that we're in the middle of right now.
Well, I skipped one of the sound bites there, John, because I wasn't trying to play the entire audio, but basically Rick Caruso is on with a station out there. The anchor comes on afterwards and basically says, hey, we've got no confirmed information that there's no water in the hydrants, and then the reporter comes on and says, actually, we do have confirmation that there was no water in the hydrants.
Yeah, and Rick Caruso is an important person in all this for people who are unaware of Los Angeles politics. Rick Caruso should have been the mayor of Los Angeles, would have been the mayor of Los Angeles, and this is important, if the Democratic establishment had not come in at the last moment and basically said, and this I'm paraphrasing, but this is not far off, look, we have to go with Karen Bass, she's the black female, and therefore we can't go with a white male who's straight, and Barack Obama came in and supported her, and the LA Times supported her, and she won by a rather narrow margin by Los Angeles standards. And it's pretty clear to me that Rick Caruso is eyeing the next mayor's race, which is next year. And I would love, I mean, I got to believe somebody is going to do a poll rather shortly here in Los Angeles to see where the mayor's race currently stands. And I would guess that Rick Caruso would be winning by a substantial margin right now, given what has happened over the last week.
Well, and even the LA Times owner has deep buyer's remorse and went public with it, saying he's
that was amazing.
Yeah.
I have to say that if there's been any sort of political earthquake, that's the best evidence of it, that the owner of the Los Angeles Times has really sounded almost like a Republican in the last week. And clearly is someone who's pleading for common sense solutions. And, you know, I'm a pessimist by nature, Mark, but I actually think there's an opportunity here for common sense to prevail, mostly because there's a massive political incentive for it to do so. I mean, there are so many elements of this situation that work in that direction. You got a mayor who's in big trouble. You got a governor who's termed out in 2 years and wants to run for president. You got the Super Bowl coming here, the World Cup coming here, the Olympics coming here in 2028. There, it's almost like it's the unstoppable force of political self-interest going up against the immovable object of liberal insanity. And it'll be interesting to see who wins. I'm not positive because it's, you know, no one has lost a lot of money betting against liberal insanity in California.
True.
But I think there's a chance. I think there's a chance here that they realize they have no choice but to knock off the BS and to allow capitalism the magic arm of capitalism to save Los Angeles from the current situation.
But, John, how do you recover from this? And you addressed this in the podcast, and I thought it was interesting because you just admitted you're and I'm the same way. I'm a glass half empty guy, right? And you talked about Adam Carolla, and he's been talking about very pessimistic that California, with all the insanity, with all the bureaucracy, that, you know, there won't be, he's predicting, a legit cleanup or rebuild. You kind of take an optimistic view. I'm shocked by that, Zig, but explain that.
Well, because I'm a big believer in self-interest. And I'm a big believer that the reason why California is so insane is because we're a one-party state with no real legitimate news media. And so therefore, you know, Democrats are basically like animals in a zoo where they have no opposition and they really don't have to fend for themselves. Well, now all of a sudden, those circumstances have changed. And I'm not suggesting, by the way, that all of a sudden California is going to go red. That's not going to happen. But I'm talking about specifically the two people that are maybe the most important here, Mayor Bass and Governor Newsom. They are very, very much incentivized to get this thing together. And by the way, and you are an expert in this, you know, because you're a movie guy, the timing of this whole thing for this city in some ways couldn't be worse, but in maybe in a weird way couldn't be better. Because if Los Angeles was riding high economically, the movie industry was in good shape, the TV industry was in good shape, maybe there wouldn't be the imperative to make sure we get this right. But I really do believe, and this sounds hyperbolic, but I think it's true. I think this is an existential threat to Los Angeles. If Los Angeles does not drop the BS, and this does become, like Adam Carolla is saying, a 5, 10, 15-year operation, Los Angeles is done as a major city. It's done. It's over. Because there's no reason for anyone to live here anymore because the business has completely changed. Movies aren't even being made here anymore.
Oh, that's right.
And if there's no tourism here, there's no reason other than the good weather, which is arguable and you know, like we've seen over the last couple of weeks, gets intermittent you know, disasters attached to it. There's no reason for anyone to live here. And or to work here, and especially in this world where you can do Zoom meetings and what have you. So I just think that there is a huge incentive, an imperative, to not screw this up. That doesn't mean they can't screw it up, because these are dumb people, a lot of them. But I'm a big believer in self-interest, and the self-interest here is very, very strong.
What's going to happen, do you think? You mentioned the rainy season, which is, you know, supposedly about to kick in or should have kicked in. But, you know, we now hear there's no vegetation. It's been burned off. So mudslides become an issue, right?
You know, I've always felt that that's overrated. You know, that's a media narrative. And I've been living here for 22 years now. And, you know, yes, there's some element of truth to that. But at this point, mudslides would be welcome.
We
need some damn rain. You know, I think we're in grave jeopardy because, I mean, I look at this very, very closely. I'm not just because I care about the weather as a golfer and we go to Yosemite every year for our vacation and that determines, you know, how much water there's going to be in the rivers and in the waterfalls and what have you, but also because the global warming issue, the climate change issue. So I am very well in tune with this, and I think we have a chance to maybe miss the entire rainy season this year.
Wow.
I mean, which would be really problematic, especially come next fall when we still haven't had – because if we don't get any rain, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I think there's a chance we get almost no rain by the end of February. Then the rainy season's over, and it's not going to rain for another 8 or 9 months. So this is a potentially bad situation.
How many of these things, you know, they're talking about the causes and maybe it was fireworks from New Year's Eve for the Palisades, but you can't help but think, because some of this stuff has been caught on video, et cetera, that there's numbskulls out there that are trying to light fires and make this even worse. And I'm worried about that in the next 24 hours.
Well, I think we had a situation here where I live where, you know, this didn't get much publicity, but the Dallas Cowboys training facility almost burned to the ground last night, not far from where I live. And I'm convinced that that had to be because of a homeless person, given the circumstances surrounding that situation. I agree with your take on the Palisades fire. I've seen the video evidence that the San Francisco Chronicle has put together. It makes it seem pretty clear that bizarrely what really transpired here was a New Year's Eve, potentially a fireworks-induced fire that everyone thought was out, that laid dormant for 4 or 5, 6 days and then reignited, and that's what actually caused the Palisades fire. None of this is ever global warming. It's either homelessness, arson, accident, electrical wires and winds. It's always man-induced,
right.
Always. And I think that we're seeing that's the reality here as well.
Zig, one topic off the fires, although I think you said, just to be clear, point of clarification, you said the Dallas Cowboys training facility. You meant the Rams training facility?
No.
You mean the Cowboys?
No.
Why do they have a facility out there?
Come on, I'm not.
Well, no, I know, but I was confused, though. Why do they have one out there?
The Dallas Cowboys come to Oxnard, California every summer for their training camp because it's a lot cooler here.
Yes.
We have this amazing microclimate here in Ventura County.
Got it.
It's a lot cooler than in Dallas, Texas.
No, I knew that they do training camps. I just, far be it from me to even think
Dallas
that
Dallas Cowboys, Oxnard, California.
Well, so my topic was going to be about the Cowboys because I know that you got to pop off on this, and I haven't seen anything on Twitter. Coach Prime to Dallas. What do you think if it happens?
Wow. I mean, how many hundreds of hours of ESPN coverage would that produce? I don't know if it'll work football-wise.
No, it'll be a disaster, but it'll be so entertaining.
I don't know that it'll be a disaster. I mean, I am conflicted about Coach Prime. There's a lot about Coach Prime I like. There's a lot of things that he says that are actually fairly conservative. You and I have never talked about this, but I actually think Coach Prime philosophically is a closet conservative.
I agree.
You agree with that?
Yes,
okay.
He says yes.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of things about him that I'm not really sold on, and I actually think his team was a bit of a fraud this year, and I think his quarterback might be a bit of a fraud, and I'm not 100% sure that Hunter deserved the Heisman Trophy. But if it were to happen, and here, in my opinion, the biggest hurdle to something like this happening is getting to first base, right, where both parties are interested, and it seems
we're at first base. Well, yeah, with McCarthy, getting out, because the story was that the Bears were interested and that the Cowboys said no, but then yesterday McCarthy's out, and he's going to talk to Chicago, and it looks like Jerry wants Deion.
Well, if you're Jerry Jones and you only have a few years to live and you need a coach and you want attention and you want a spark – this is the way to do it. So, I think there's probably at least a 50-60% chance this happens, and that's all we're going to talk about in the National Football League, at least until next October.
It will be entertaining. Yeah, it'll be entertaining for sure. Hey, I like the new episode of The Death of Journalism is out there right now. John talks a lot about some of the DEI stuff and all the stuff. We didn't even really get into that, but good job on the podcast. Happy New Year. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, thanks. Thanks, John.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Things we didn't talk about with John is the insurance situation, and we've heard that State Farm has dropped a lot of people in the Palisades, and one of the reasons was because of what the state was doing in the way that they were assessing risk, right? So they have something called the FAIR plan, which is the state pool, and I guess the FAIR plan can't refuse to cover homes just because they're in a vulnerable area. So the risk of wildfire grows. Zig was addressing that. Homes deemed too dangerous get dropped from their insurance companies, and then they're picked up by the FAIR plan, right? So between 2020 and 2024, the number of homes covered by that plan in California doubled. It was about half a million properties, and that tripled to about $500 billion.
Wasn't it, though, that State Farm pulled out before all of this because they saw the writing on the wall?
Yeah, that's what I mean. They pulled out because the state essentially forced them to, because they were rewriting the rules on how they would assess risk, and they said, we can't do this financially. So they drop coverage. The FAIR plan is supposed to, pick up the gaps here, right? So Pacific Palisades, a lot of the people in Palisades don't have insurance. They have the FAIR plan. So Have you heard the estimates for the losses?
Oh, it's outrageous. Billions and hundreds of billions.
As of last Friday, you want to take a stab at how much the FAIR Plan had in the bank account?
Oh,
play
no.
Claims?
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'm going to say $50
million. $377 million. But we're talking about $30
billions.
Billion. Yeah, look, this estimate
it's
of $30 billion is going to go, it is literally going to go to hundreds of billions. Now, that's not just for Palisades. So, but let's just say Palisades is $30 billion, right? Well, Senator Padilla in California is the one that said that there was $377 million. So then they came back and they said they looked at it because they have reinsurance that would cover some of this. My dad could explain all this stuff because he was the insurance. He was actually in the reinsurance industry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's a company here called, it used to be Gallagher Bassett, Arthur J. Gallagher. He worked for that company. They are a reinsurer. It's well above my pay grade. Well, but you know, I worked one of the real jobs I had when I was in college is I worked for an insurance co-op because my dad kind of helped me get the gig. And I remember one day I did a newsletter for them. I was like 19 years old too. And one day I was interviewing the director of insurance for the state of Missouri. Right.
Wow.
And I was talking to him and he goes, and he knew my dad was, right? My dad was in. She goes, chip off the old block. And I didn't have the heart to tell him, there's no way in hell I'm going into the insurance industry. First of all, I'm not smart enough to. But Padilla's staff comes back and they say, look, the reinsurance is $5.75 billion. Well, that's a lot of money, right? And that's a lot better than $377 million. But if the losses exceed $30 billion and the FAIR Plan, let's say it covers $6 billion, I'm not real good at math, but that's still $24 billion out there that's not covered, right?
That is so much money.
It's a lot of money. And that's why, you know, I was so fascinated to hear John Ziegler be positive about this because he's right about something. If they don't get their act together and if they don't go all in, and by the way, and one of the questions I didn't ask John is how much Trump's going to play a role in this because I think that he has to, right?
Oh, for sure.
But if they don't get this settled, how long will this rebuild take? And then what is left of Los Angeles as an industry, right? As Hollywood?
You know, that's one question. You're absolutely right. But I think people will go back there. It's just like flooded areas. People think of it as their home and they're going to go back. But think about how scarce it's going to be with resources to rebuild.
Well, that's what I mean.
And
I
everybody's got money, so they'll throw. I mean, you'll just make a fortune.
Yeah, but Sue, look, I was thinking about this. Think of it
carpenter.
This way. Let's say that you got stupid money, like Mel Gibson. You hear Mel Gibson talking about this. He's kind of laughing it off. Well, not everyone can laugh it off. My guess is Mel Gibson's going to be fine, right? But in many situations, all right, let's take it this way. Let's say Mel Gibson wants to rebuild his home. He's got millions of dollars. He can pay somebody more than anyone else, a contractor.
Yes.
It might not matter if the contractor doesn't have workers and all of that, it might not matter. So even in a situation, I know that this has come up, I've had conversations with people of means that have had some issues with addiction in their family, right? Mm-hmm. And you're desperate to get help for people in this situation was young people, kids, right?
Right.
Doesn't matter. You have all the resources in the world. You got to still find the facilities that are available, and there's not enough facilities.
Everybody needs it. What are you going to do?
Right. That's why.
It's mind-boggling.
You're going to have, and I don't know if Rick Caruso is the right guy. He sounds like he's pretty sharp, and he's going to lead the way on this. But, you know, I don't think anyone can say that Karen Bass has instilled confidence in any kind of rebuild moving forward for Los Angeles. It's going to be really, really tricky, and I don't know how it's going to end. One thing I will say is we're in relatively good shape throughout this period through the afternoon. It's 3:30 in Los Angeles right now. The winds have kicked up. And there have been gusts up to 60 miles an hour, but no out-of-control fires. You know, John just sent me the video of that thing that he referred to by the Cowboys training facility, and that was a hell of a fire last night. The crews did a great job at getting that knocked out. All right, well, we have Mark Krikorian with us. I didn't know if we were going to hook up with him, but I think we do have him this afternoon, who is with the Center for Immigration Policy. I was kind of referring to this story earlier, and I haven't really touched on it, but Steve Bannon is against Elon Musk right now. And this is over the H-1B visa situation. Bannon gave an interview where he called Elon Musk evil, a truly evil person. And he said this, I will get Elon Musk kicked out by the time he's inaugurated. So that only gives him 6 days at this point. He won't have a blue pass with full access to the White House. He'll be like everyone else. So I don't know what the personality disagreement is between those two guys. We'll have to see where that develops. But this visa issue is interesting because I guess there is a feeling amongst some Republicans that Trump is not going to fulfill some promises on this. So we invited Mark to come on here from the Center for Immigration Policy. Sorry, Mark, I didn't know if we were going to get you on, so I started veering off into another topic here. But how are you this afternoon?
No problem. I'm doing very well, thanks. And I'm glad there's nothing burning where I am anyway. I mean, yeah. That's horrible.
I know. Well, explain, when we hear these, this is one of the situations that I don't even fully understand, but who are those that hold the H-1B visas, and why is this something that's kind of popping up right now is going to be pretty important in the coming months?
The H-1B visa is a supposedly temporary visa that mainly is used by tech companies to import kind of average-level white-collar workers. It's not best and brightest. There are some people in there that are probably really our top talents, but there are other visas for Einsteins. This is used, and it's a pretty big program. It's $85,000 a year plus some extras, and it can last for up to 6 years or even longer. And most of the people who come in are from India, and it's used as a way of cutting costs of basically importing cheap labor, people who are working cheaper than Americans. Now, when people hear cheap labor, they're thinking somebody out there in the fields picking tomatoes or something. No, they're making more money than that. But for their occupations and where they're, you know, working, they're cheap labor. There's just no question about it. And they're used to replace American workers. I don't know if you remember, but a while ago, it may have been 10 years ago at this point, time flies, Disney in Orlando laid off, fired its entire American IT staff and replaced them with H-1B workers, Indians. And to make it even worse, they forced the American workers to train their H-1B replacements because they had no skills. They didn't know what they were doing. And this is what really galls people, and that's why this particular program, it's not just big, it's incredibly abusive. And that's one of the reasons it's blown up over the past few weeks in kind of a debate or argument between the tech bros that are, you know, newly friends of President Trump and his own voters who are very suspicious of this kind of program.
Yeah, and I guess some of this we can fold in. I mentioned Elon, but Vivek Ramaswamy is someone who has made the case for these visas, and that's making some folks that were on the Trump side and some people interested in, you know, solving some of these immigration issues a little concerned. So where do you think this sort of lands? Is there a compromise, you know, landing spot here or not?
There definitely is. And look, I'm not, you know, sort of putting myself in the position of peacemaker or anything, but just looking at it as an analyst, yes, there is a compromise here. And the key thing to remember about the H-1B program is that they give these out by lottery. I swear to God, if there are more applications than there are visa slots, they pick randomly among this pool of people, a few of whom really are top talents, but most of whom are middling at best. So the compromise is to do what the Trump people tried to do last time, and they ran out of time to do it, and Biden pulled the plug on it, which is change the way you distribute the visas so that people who get, so that they go to people who employers are offering the most money to, the highest salaries, because that would suggest that they're the most valuable to their employers and the most valuable to the economy. And, you know, it's, I think both sides would get something out of that. It wouldn't be everything either side wants, but it would be a genuine compromise, a win-win solution. And I just, look, I like Steve Bannon, but the idea that, you know, Musk is evil and the enemy, I just, it's not the way to keep a coalition together.
No, it's not, which was why that was so jarring, you know, when I saw that language and the prediction that he wouldn't even have a pass by Inauguration Day. It doesn't seem to be trending in Steve Bannon's direction in this point. But you never know.
Right.
Crazier things have happened. Is the H-1B issue completely separate from the so-called Dreamers, or is there some crossover there?
Well, there's no crossover, but there's a political potential crossover. I mean, I could see the president, who actually wants to give amnesty to the Dreamers, he said it over and over again, you know, putting some kind of package deal together. I just don't see how anything like that would work. But no, as far as the policy itself, no, there's no overlap. I mean, the there may be one dreamer somewhere who finagled an H-1B visa and, you know, became legal, but I've never heard of that happening. Maybe it has, but if there is overlap, it's very, very small.
But fair to say, and safe to say right now, that the administration, the incoming administration, is feeling a little heat from some, you know, some corners that they might not have if this issue wouldn't have creeped up.
Oh, there's no question about that. I mean, clearly there was going to be some tension between the president's new friends in the tech industry and ordinary Trump voters. Because, you know, Elon has said immigration should be, you know, increased. Even the president has said he wants high levels of immigration. But his own voters pretty clearly want lower levels, not just of illegal immigration, but even legal immigration. So this is the kind of thing that was going to flare up one way or the other. In fact, Politico, which is a D.C. kind of insider publication on politics, published an article at the beginning of December, before this was an issue, before this latest thing became an issue, entitled something like Stephen Miller versus Elon Musk on immigration. In other words, that this was, so those tensions were there already. You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. Mark Krikorian, thank you so much for putting this into perspective for us on 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
I'll be very curious to see how this kind of works itself out with Bannon and you know, Trump and Elon, because this was an interview. I had missed this. The New York Times wrote about it a couple of days ago. This was last week where Bannon said he's truly evil person. Stopping him has become a personal issue for me. And he goes on to say, let's see, in the New York Times piece, they said the focus of the dispute, and this is why we wanted to have Mark on, the use of the H-1B visas to bring skilled foreign workers to U.S. companies, a practice decried by some conservatives who oppose immigration. Mr. Musk supports the visas, like many tech leaders who say they help bring critical workers to their companies. Bannon said in the interview that the visas prevented Americans from getting jobs. Mr. Bannon said that Mr. Musk, whom he described as having the maturity of a child, at least they're not name-calling anymore, right, had lost the policy debate over the visas. He also questioned whether the tech billionaire should limit his involvement in U.S. politics because he was born and grew up in South Africa, and Bannon says he should go back to South Africa. My impression has been that Trump seemingly and the Trump team has been a little bit more on the Elon Musk side of the equation than the Steve Bannon side of the equation, which seems to be more old school. But what do I know? Who knows? It gets nasty sometimes. Audio cut of the day is coming up. We have audio cut of the day coming up here in just a couple of minutes on a Wednesday show. We will have our friend Alex Rich from Y98 here tossing out some fun things in the 4 o'clock hour. I think we might have Senator Schmidt set up for tomorrow. I'm going to check with Fred. Thursday, I will be here. Friday and Monday off. You know, Monday is the holiday. It's also Inauguration Day. We'll have full coverage. Mike Elam's going to do the roundtable on Friday, and he's going to take over the chair on Monday as well. I have not been to my second home, Las Vegas, Nevada, in a few months. So it's time for me to go back. That's essentially why I'm not going to be here. Let's see here. For audio cut of the day, a couple of thoughts. Let's do it.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right. Well, there was a bunch from the hearings, and some of it was just completely ridiculous and offensive. They were trying to do, essentially, the Democrat members of the committee trying to do a Brett Kavanaugh to Pete Hegseth this morning. But he held up extremely well. He really did. He did great. And Eric Schmidt, who's on the Judiciary Committee, was asking some of the questions this morning.
For those watching at home, DEI is not about giving everybody opportunity. It is rooted in cultural Marxism. The idea that you pit the room, any room, with oppressor versus oppressed. It's race essentialism, and it is poison. It has no business whatsoever in our military. I think the American people have spoken loudly and clearly about this. They're tired of this. They're tired of woke ideology. And to my Democrat colleagues on the other side, if you haven't picked up on that, you missed the plot. Because that's what November 5th partially was about.
Yeah, we played that soundbite a little earlier, but then they went on to offer some examples of DEI in the military.
In our academies, specifically the Air Force Academy, it was advised as disfavored language to refer to your mom and dad as mom and dad. Okay? Dear mom and dad, I'm writing home. Don't say that. That's insane. We're all just people. You can't say that either. And in an effort to police this, in a 1984 Orwellian novel, there was actually an eyes and ears program to rat on your fellow students who might say mom and dad. Or just say in a tough situation, you know what? We're all just people. Can't say that. This wasn't limited, by the way, to our academies. Secretary of the Air Force, our current Secretary of the Air Force, in a memo from August of 2022, thought we had too many white officers, advocated for quotas. And if you crunch the numbers, that meant that 5,800 white officers who've worked really hard should be fired. In the United States of America, I don't know how we got here.
It's a comedy show. It is a complete clown show. And that kind of stuff, there again, who's going to disagree with Eric Schmidt if they know the facts? 90% of Americans would agree that that's the dumbest thing that you could have done, especially in the military. It really is. Now, this next audio cut of the day is for you, Sue. I don't know if you've heard this yet. This is kind of interesting. You're going to know the voice. He put a video together. It's quite well done.
What a crazy idea it is.
Chief!
What a bit of madness. This vast, sprawling city, collection of cities, on an earthquake-prone, drought-prone, fire-prone desert by the sea. What were we thinking?
You know, he goes into some really good detail in this video.
We'll argue, of course, about mitigation practices, about what we should have done, and about climate change for sure. Is that what made this one so big, so bad? But here is an easy prediction. Though it will be very difficult, it will all be rebuilt. And most of us will stay. And more will come to this great mess of a city.
So a little optimism that John Ziegler shared, but that's like a five-minute video.
I saw part of it.
3.5 minutes. It's really well done.
Yeah, it is.
See, I couldn't put a Keith Morrison video past you, could I, Sue? I tried. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Get more at 971talk.com.